the champagne pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up.
Hear a knock on the door and the night begins. Cause we've done this before, so you come on in. Make yourself at my home, tell me where you been. Pour yourself something cold, baby, cheers to this. Sometimes you gotta stay in, and you know where I live. Yeah, you know what we is. Sometimes you gotta stay in.
Quarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there. I am back and welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Minicamp is over. Still see some of the players around here in the building, some of the coaches around, but they're getting ready for their summer vacation before they return for training camp later this summer. Now, we'll talk about a lot of different things here on today's show. We've got some sound for you guys that we'll play, some player and coach interviews for you as the Browns wrapped up their minicamp last week. We will also talk about one of the things P. Myers Golf, one of our good friends of the show, tweeted me, and we'll get into this, is he wants to go through rookie by rookie our impressions of them through the first phase of the offseason.
We got 14 of them. That'll eat up some good showtime.
That'll eat up some good showtime and be some good content. So, yes,
absolutely.
We'll break down the rookies for you. We will do that. I am back from my journey down to Hotlanta, and it was hot, 97 degrees with 40% humidity over the weekend, which made for an uncomfortable situation on the golf course. But nonetheless, my cousin and I and the Smoke Rise member guest, we did not win, but we came away with some cash. So, all
cash
in all,
king.
A successful trip down there. I'd take
cash over a trophy any day.
Oh, yeah. And I was very sad, though, obviously, not to be at Gibbs's Affair. But as you and I were talking before the show, it sounded like a phenomenal soiree.
It was. Yeah, I had a great weekend. You know, my daughter's every two-year recital was on Saturday afternoon. So I missed the start of the reception. But she did great. She rocked out her little recital, and then we made our way to Gibbs. And I was I didn't know where we were going. It was in Valley View, and we ended up at, I think it's called the West Falls Event Center, for those out there that might know of it. It's basically, I guess, the former mayor of Independence, you know, bought this property at some point, and he started throwing parties here. And then eventually he just started throwing parties, or people asked to throw parties on this property. It's got log cabin. It's got a beautiful bar. It's got, you know, a lot of covered pavilions, bocce ball, ping pong, cornhole, fire pit. I mean, it's got like an actual fire pit where you could like cook a pig as well.
Hog roast.
Yes. So all I know is my wife and I got there. We were like, this is amazing. Like, to have a great day. And he did. It was a little humid, you know, before the sun started to go down around 9 o'clock. It was hot and humid. I didn't stop sweating until it started to get dark. But I looked at my wife and I go, this is amazing. Like, we need to find a reason to throw a party here, you know, just with our friends, because it was just, it's imagine your backyard setting and the best backyard picnic you could have with 350 of your friends and family. And that's what Gibbs had. You know, he and his wife, new wife, Monica, were, you know, making their ways around, having a blast. And, I know Gibbs is always well received by all of our fan base. And I gave him the credit to his face, and I said it to multiple other people about Gibbs. Like, Deacon was there, Doug Deacon, Jim Donovan, Tony Grossi, Pat McMenamin. So I was like, is Mary Kay and Scott Patrick going to be walking in anytime soon? Because I felt very much at home, because a lot of the same faces that you see walking around Berea here on an open media day were there in participation to help celebrate Gibbs' wedding. But my whole point of being is, Gibbs is just an all-around great guy.
He's the best.
You know, and he is the best, and a lot of people showed up to celebrate with him, and it was shorts, T-shirts, flip-flops, and it was just an all-in-all great time and a great setting, and congratulations to the both of them.
Did anybody kind of, like, not believe that they were serious about the dress code and show up in, like, formal wedding attire?
Yeah. No. Nobody.
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 Okay.
No. And that's the one thing that Gibbs even said, you know, when we first got there. He's like, Monica and I just kept looking at ourselves like, nobody's declining the invitation to this reception. And I think a lot of it has to do with Gibbs' personality.
Because he's the best.
You know, the good old boy, beer drinking, you know, flip-flop wearing guy. And that's exactly what it was. It fit him to the T, and I didn't see anybody not having a good time. I mean, the DJ was playing music the whole time. Everybody's partaking in, again, all the games and such, and just, you know, getting caught up in good conversation, good food. They had a little bit of barbecue, which was good. His wife, Monica, made a wedding day shot that he said included, it was in a Gatorade type jug, included a bottle of Everclear, moonshine, and multiple other ingredients. Like, he had me at Everclear. So I was like, I had to do one.
Was it good?
It was good.
I bet
it was like blue.
I bet it tasted real good.
It tasted real good. It was like, and it was Hawaiian
trash
punch.
Trash can punch.
Yes, trash can punch.
From
exactly.
College.
Yeah, like Harry Buffalo.
Did you go through
minus
a lot of trash can punch in your college?
Harry
days?
Buffalo is what we do. You know, with the
and the
in a big bucket with the fruits floating. Yeah.
We used to do it in
eating
the fruits
the best
can.
After a few hours because it soaks up the alcohol.
Oh yeah, it's a delicious treat.
Yes,
no doubt.
But all in all, a great day, great weekend.
By the way, there's some other stuff going on today.
Yes,
as it relates to Cleveland sports, of course, the Cavaliers. The Cavaliers going game 5 in Golden State. Now, it seemed pretty much that the series was over after Thursday. Did you guys talk about that on Friday show at all?
We did.
Or was the game? Oh, no, the game was Friday night. Oh, no, so you haven't got to talk about it.
No.
Not a great performance. Warriors looked dominant, and then you thought it was over. And now.
Did they really, though?
Who?
I didn't think the Warriors were all in all.
Their defense is stifling. I mean, it looked like we didn't run an offense because they're D so good.
Kyrie
had 38.
Kyrie, with the ball in his hands, off the dribble, is stifling.
Yeah, but I felt like at least he played hard and gave it his all, and I had no problem with Kyrie's.
The most frustrating thing to me is our go-to offense is still one person dribbling the basketball and four other people spotting up at the three-point line. And I hate that, whether it's LeBron, and it's predominantly LeBron or Kyrie. LeBron or Kyrie with the basketball doing something with it, dribbling it, of course, and four other guys standing and watching the basketball with their toes on the three-point line.
Because we don't have a lot of movement. We really don't have that kind of an offense. But the NBA goes and suspends Draymond Green, which I think is...
And they're screaming for Game 7.
Because I'm if I weren't in Cleveland and a Cavs season ticket holder and wanting the Cavs, I would think this is... Does Draymond deserve some punishment for what he did to Steven Adams? Yes, but that time should have been in that series. And I understand it's a cumulative thing, but to me, when you get to the finals, everything should reset because this
but
is
hold on,
for the
but
biggest
have
stage.
You have you watched the interaction in slow motion between Draymond and LeBron?
Yeah.
Have you watched it?
Yeah.
So you saw the uphanded punch to the groin of LeBron from the backside.
Yeah, but I mean, I didn't think it was. I thought that's a technical
for a
foul.
And he was one technical away from being suspended.
They upgraded it to a flagrant though, which is why I think he was two technicals or one flagrant away.
I thought he was one technical away.
The release that I read said that it was a flagrant. LeBron was assessed a technical.
Right.
He was assessed a flagrant, and then that's why he's out.
Okay, but the same point that when you look at players like Vontaze Burfict or James Harrison and the way he plays the game. Or Rodney Harrison.
Sure.
As his career went on, or as a season goes on, a player like them have a bull. They create the bullseye themselves because of their track record.
Of course.
And the director of NFL officiating talks to that crew about the red flags with certain players or the style of play by a certain team. So they go into the game with a little bit of premeditation. With an eye on that person to not act up.
Totally. Totally agree. He put the bullseye on himself.
So he did it to himself.
He should have known better.
I would not think it's not due to get him suspended. I would agree with that if it had been a first or second offense. But this is an all-year thing and a playoff thing for him. So it's the culmination of his 2016 playoffs.
Totally deserves it. Not a fan of Draymond Green's in any way. This is what I think, though. I think when you get to the NBA Finals, all that stuff should reset. To get suspended from a game in the NBA Finals, it should be based on something that happens in the NBA Finals that's suspension worthy, not something that you did in the first round or the second round or the third round.
I don't agree with that.
Okay.
I don't agree.
That's just what I think.
Because I don't necessarily believe and first of all, I don't think the reason why it happened is because Draymond Green is Draymond Green. It's not, I'm finally in the finals. Now to not get suspended, I need to play different and out of character.
LeBron
and change
did
who
step
I am.
Over him and try to like...
Fine. I get it. It happens on the football field almost once a game.
Yeah. Then
where one guy, you just happen to get, your legs are split with a guy below you. It can look very disrespectful, which is how it was perceived, which is why Draymond reacted the way he did. And the other thing, and this is not coming from a LeBron Cleveland bias, but like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry are the most unphysical, untough individuals in the world until you put a microphone in front of their face and they start talking smack. Like Klay Thompson to me is the epitome of good player, good shoot, great shooter, but he is like patty cake, you know, butter soft in the way he plays the game, and he gets a microphone in front of it, you know, and he's back on the West Coast and he's talking trash.
So I had a couple, I was talking with the kid about that on the way in today. Well, first of all, I think Klay Thompson's actually a very underrated defender, will rebound. I don't know that he's soft per se, but I understand based on his like comments after the Mazda
And it's not even so much in the way he plays. I just think his personality is soft.
Yes. This is what I think. I was telling him, this is the analogy that I made. I think these guys in the NBA, do you remember when Tiger was so dominant and like the players on the golf tour would talk about him in reverential terms and almost if he had the lead after 54 holes, they almost psyched themselves out and nobody could catch him. Then all of a sudden people started beating him and then they kind of changed the way that they talked about him. And I think when these guys watch LeBron get the ball wide open at 20 feet and not even look at the basket like he's Tristan Thompson, I don't think they fear him in any way. And he does do a lot of crying on the court and I think that they have had enough of that. But I like it because it makes it more interesting. I hope that LeBron responds to those comments and plays a great game. And I think that the Warriors, from talking to somebody who I know is pretty close to that organization, I think those guys are pissed and want to make a statement. So tonight's game, I think, is going to be very combustible and very interesting to watch because I think the Warriors are pissed and feel like they got hosed on this.
And the Cavs have nothing to lose.
Because of LeBron's whining, and the Cavs feel like they have nothing to lose. And Klay totally talks smack. And then Mo Spates, who played with LeBron, was talking a lot of smack. So that's going to be interesting.
Listening in preparation for tonight's game and up to this point, and I'll just throw this back to you. I don't feel there are times where LeBron goes to the rim and there is contact that is not called because LeBron is LeBron that gets called for Curry, for Klay, for Draymond, for other players.
I think a big part of it is
and I think it's a travesty that LeBron James isn't shooting 8 to 10 free throws a game.
Part of it is because LeBron James's offense, if we're going to be honest about it, has been relegated to a bully style of offense where he tries to bowl you over and initiates a lot of that contact. He has always, since he came to the league, I've said, unfairly been penalized for being bigger, stronger, and faster.
Yes.
And that is a fact, and that continues to this day. But they could, the weird thing about the NBA and watching the finals where they let him, I thought they let game four was a pretty physical game.
Yes.
And the refs pretty much let them play on both sides of the ball, and there was a lot of physicality in that. And that you would think that helps LeBron, but I think that ultimately hurts LeBron at this point because his game on offense right now is bully. He's got to, at this point, with the way that he's shooting or not shooting, play in the post, and they need to run their offense through him in the post. With this Draymond thing, I think that they're going to try to run their offense through Kevin Love.
Yeah,
on Harrison Barnes, and Kevin Love needs to have a big game tonight. And as the kid likes to call Kyrie, the modern-day Mamba, he needs to not pound the ball so much, but he needs to continue to attack and be the main guy.
He does. He does. And I just thought that as I watched game four, we had, you know, friends over our house Friday night to watch the game, and that was, even again, with the Warriors playing as well as they did defensively, to me that was not a game that was out of reach. What I felt was we went away from who we are, and we let an 8-0 run or a 10-0 run or 11-0 run happen to the Warriors, and we just flat out couldn't respond. We responded to multiple runs because there were multiple runs by both teams in different game in the game where it got close, stayed close, they'd get up, we'd get up, so on and so forth. But then they made a run, and we had no answer, and that's the end of it. And I think that's what kills many teams when they play the Warriors and why 73 wins was, so, you know, they made it look so easy.
Yes.
A string of shots. And you miss a couple, and the game's over.
Yes. Yes. The question, though, to you that I throw back at you is that what are we on offense? What is our identity on offense?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, we're obviously a three-point shooting team as you look at it. The one thing that frustrates
me, we're not getting open threes,
and I don't necessarily know if it's a matchup, but the one thing I'll go back to is that we haven't seen that dual high pick or the double pick at the free throw line that got us multiple layups, alley-oop dunks, and clean shots in the Raptor series. Now, I know that's a different team, and the way that the Warriors play us and the matchups are all different now, too. But There are things that I feel we could be doing to be more proactive in regards to running a true offense that could potentially get us open looks that we're not doing.
No.
It's like we're literally playing like AAU street ball sometimes.
Yes, and I think part of that credit goes to the Warriors' defense, but I think part of it is you're right. There is not a whole lot of imagination on the Cavaliers' offense.
How about right now, who is your finals MVP right now? Because I heard there's multiple names that have been thrown out, and I just want to see where your head's at on it.
I probably would give it right now just to Iguodala because I think Iguodala changes the game. If they don't have Iguodala, I think if they lost Iguodala for a game, it's a much bigger loss for them than even Draymond. Now, his numbers don't say that, but
his plus-minus.
His plus-minus on the floor and what he means to that team.
His plus-minus is the highest.
Isn't it like over 60?
In the three games that they've won in the series.
Isn't it over? It's over 60,
yeah, the highest of both teams.
Yeah, so that would be mine. I mean, Curry's probably going to get it with Draymond getting suspended if they go on to win.
And it's 38 last week or last game.
But maybe the Cavs go out and they shock the world. All you got to do is win game five, then you're back home. You win game six, and you got to anything can happen in a game seven. Shock the world.
And I mean, yeah, maybe
Curry. I just don't like it, though. It's the finals. If I want the Cavs to win, I want them to go ahead and just go forward and beat the Warriors that are supposed to be on the court. That's my issue with it. And I don't know, people are sending around the video. Do you see the video from last year's finals when LeBron like blatantly elbowed Iguodala as hard as he could in his groin area?
No.
And they called a foul on Iguodala on the play and nothing after the fact happened. LeBron, so that's what all the Warriors fans. I hear from, obviously, I still have friends in the Bay Area,
sure.
So they're all up in arms with it. As a Cavs fan, it's funny. I saw so many people celebrating it. I don't celebrate it. I want the Cavs to win.
Yeah.
I want them to beat Draymond, actually, as opposed to win and then because of him. But I think tonight's game is going to be interesting because I think this, based on the talk, is going to be the most emotionally charged of all the games. And it'll be interesting to me to see because LeBron has in the past been a very passive-aggressive leader, is what I would call him, to see if do the Cavs lay down or do the Cavs come out and fight.
Because not only is it – it's definitely going to be happening – it's now going to be happening on the floor, emotionally charged, because that play – Oracle Arena is emotionally charged for every Golden State home game. So – now it's the energy is going to be crazy in the stadium. In the arena, and now on and chippy on the court.
Oh, it is.
So I think emotions are going to be running high, and that's where I believe that if the Cavaliers could come out and stymie what the Warriors are going to try to accomplish in the first 24 minutes of basketball, that could play into our favor the way that Game 3 did. I know on our home floor, where you know we become the out physical, winning the 50-50 balls. Put the fans to bed, and then potentially get other chippy fouls in retaliation at that point by the Warriors, kind of like for Draymond Green, you know, in his suspension.
So it's funny. After that came out, Stephen A. Smith said that he was done with the NBA. I'm pretty sure he's going to be working tonight. I would imagine to see that. The other thing he just said, I'm just reading as a tweet came across. Stephen A. Smith says he would have proven that O.J. Simpson was guilty if he had the chance back in the day. What's he even talking about? Oh, my.
Let's grab a break.
We're going to get a break. It is a fun Monday here in Berea. It's very quiet, but everybody's focused. We've got a lot of things going on. Obviously, we can talk about minicamp. We can talk about the Cavaliers. We're going to hear from Desmond Bryant later on in the show, secondary coach Louis Chofi. And we also have, if we can, we've got Nate Orchard, Danny Shelton. So we'll try to go with a couple of those today. But give us your phone calls, 216-578-0850. And when we come back, we'll start to break down the rookies and what we've seen from them here in the Browns mandatory minicamp. 216-578-0850 is the Gurren Wilhelm on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD, Zagura and Wilhelm here. You know, Cavs game. We got some Browns to talk, but let's go to the phones real quickly. We've got Dave and Avon want to talk to us. Dave, welcome.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, I mean, Draymond, he got, you know, the rules are the rules, whether you like them or not. He knew the rules.
Agreed. He's never should have given them. That's why I was telling my dad. My dad was up in arms, who still lives in Barron. Yeah. I was like, Dad, he's an idiot. He knows he's under scrutiny. He should never have given them the opportunity.
He could have easily have just got up as LeBron was going over him and, you know, maybe did something that wasn't so obvious. I mean, you know, easily and got hit back at him, as he would say. But the thing that gets me is you see it in the NBA. I guess you see it in the NFL, too. And I know, Matt, you can speak to it maybe, you know, after I'm done. But they say, you know, oh, they're letting them play. But really in game four, I think one of the announcers mentioned it, they're letting them foul. You know what I mean? You're letting them foul. A foul is a foul. And I know LeBron has forever, you know, not been officiated great because he's hard to officiate. But I think the players, I can see why they get mad in the playoffs. All of a sudden, it's a call all year. Yep. And then all of a sudden, it's not. And you say that it hurts Cleveland. Well, believe me, if they call a tight game, they're going to call those, you know, grabs and pushes on Curry and Clay on the screens at the baseline. So it's going to be a foul shooting contest if they call it tight. But like I say, now, Matt, they do it in football too. They're like, you know, the holding and the stuff that goes on that maybe they don't call in the playoffs. I just want to know if that – I just get sick of it in the NBA where they say they're letting them play. I understand it, but if it's a foul, it's a foul. If it's a hold, it's a hold. You know?
You're absolutely right. You're right. And thank you very much for the call. And the one thing that became part of, like – you know, Wednesday morning when you know, throughout the season, when you show up and the game plan is essentially introduced to you and the opponents are introduced to you, every place that I played, along with the team that you're playing, who their coaches are, you know, introducing their offensive and defense coordinator and the concepts that they like to run, our coaches also highlighted who was refereeing our football games. Because the same way that these referees all call a game a little bit differently, you know, different referees and the analytics associated with these referees, this is a offensive holding,
right?
You know, stat. This is what they do. So we've got to watch our hands. We've got to do this. Or this is a, you know, that 5-yard cushion. These guys are nitpicky on that. So we'd work our discipline all week to not have those issues so you wouldn't see those penalties. And even furthermore, what I don't like, and I think, you know, baseball's done a really good job of fine-tuning this, is defining a strike, like defining a foul. Every umpire has, you know, their strike or what's a ball and what's a strike. And I think for the longest time you saw, you know, hitters go up there and not know what was a ball and what was a strike as they were fine tuning that strike zone. And I don't know. I'm not so much in favor of if Dellavedova goes to the rim and gets fouled, it should be called. If LeBron goes to the rim and get fouled, not because he shouldn't get the call because he's a superstar, LeBron James. Well, those guys are going to get that call.
Did you ever experience in the playoffs in the National Football League that they would let you guys be a little more physical? Because,
yeah.
So that's kind of what it is, right?
It is, but I think to a certain point, you don't want the referees to get in the way because the game needs to be played or have an opportunity to control or impact the final score or late in the game. That's why you'll see flags get tucked and whistles get swallowed at those portions of the game. But I think throughout, the rules are the rules. And I don't understand why, you know, you call something in round one of a game or game one of an NBA Finals differently. To me, it's the same game, same number of guys on the court, and they're both, to me, a step in the process towards hosting that trophy. Why can you ultimately say one is more important than another? Because if the same team is playing in game one of the first round or game one of the finals, it's like you'd hope it'd be the same.
Right.
And I don't like the inconsistency. I don't like the inconsistency of some of the referees and the way they call their games.
How hard do you think it must be, though? Because it's such a physical game played by big, unbelievable athletes that they could, in theory, when you watch these games, you could pretty much call a penalty on a foul on every single play in the NBA.
You're right. It is very hard, and there's the human error associated with it. And I think the Cleveland Cavaliers need to find out. I want to see the game at times. get slowed down. You know, when LeBron wants to take it upon himself to go to the rim and try to get a basket after a 6-0 flurry by the Warriors, and, you know, throws it at the rim because he's getting fouled and it is a no call, and then the Warriors come down and make it an 8-0 run or a 9-0 run. All LeBron is trying to do is go to the line, be aggressive for his team, make a basket to negate that run, or slow the game down and go to the free throw line and then go 1-2. No, I meant, and then, but slow to, and have an opportunity to put points on the board, slow down that pace instead of it taking Tyronn Lue calling a timeout and really, like, you know, losing that momentum to try to stop that run. I see LeBron doing it, but he's just not getting calls. And I've never seen LeBron aimlessly throw the basketball at the rim as much as he has. And so to me, when you really go back and watch it, and I do, you know, with my DVR, he's getting hacked. He gets bodied every single time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like you award him when he flexes and, you know, he muscles through that, but it shouldn't take muscling through a foul for it to be called a foul. And I don't like that.
I agree with you. Fouls are fouls. Now, we of the Cavs have been very physical with Steph Curry whenever he's running around, which in probably regular season games would get called for those ticky-tack
away
from the ball fouls.
But the Cavs have never – has anyone in the NBA Finals been in foul trouble at all? So much so that we've had to sub them out.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't
say
so.
The Warriors have had more foul trouble.
So I wouldn't be so opposed. You're right, with both Thompson and Curry a couple times. But I saw – yes, they might. It might slow the game down and have them go, you know, to the free throw line shooting 85%+ and give them, you know, almost an automatic 2. But I think I don't have a problem because we've never had an issue with fouls. That if they call those, he's the unanimous MVP of the league. He deserves to be taken care of. And I know that goes against a little bit of what I just said. But if it's off the ball and he's getting clanged around like a ping pong ball, you know what I mean, or a pinball, it's like you got to call it eventually. Okay, so. So Kyrie gets to 3 or 4 fouls, but he's never in jeopardy of getting subbed out. It doesn't affect who we have on our floor, and it never has. So call it. And they're not going to the bonus every quarter.
No.
You know, because they are letting him play. So I don't have a problem with that either. If I'm going to ask for LeBron's foul at the rim, Curry getting banged around, you know, it's only going to wear on him. So call it.
You'll give it to everybody. You're not worried.
No.
You're not afraid.
No.
I like it. 216-578-0850. Our producer today, Matt Fontana, is Gibbs soaking up his wedded bliss. Fontana, what do you think about tonight's game?
You know, guys, I said on RBS, I don't know why. Honestly, tonight has little to do with the Cavs for me. It's just think about the Warriors. They're so good. They're extremely ticked off about the Draymond Green situation.
You sound like the kid. The kid does not have a good feel for tonight's
game.
And
then also, too, they have a chance to do something they couldn't do last year, close out at home.
At home. Right.
So, I mean, it's going to be – I did say this, though. If you have LeBron James on the court and motivated, which he clearly is, you will always have a chance to win.
Of course.
But do you think that I could – and this is just devil's advocate to go – just to be opposing to what you just said is I could see that the Warriors wanting to close out at home and win it in front of their fans, but because of everything that's on the line tonight without Draymond and so on and so forth, that – if it does get a little tough or physical and they're losing those 50-50 balls, that if they want to come back to Cleveland to win it here again with Draymond. And I don't know if they're that good.
I don't think so. I think they want to win it at home.
Okay.
And I also read, did you know this? 19 years ago on this day, Steve Kerr hit the game-winning shot to give the Bulls their 5th title in 7 years. So I think he probably wants it today. 19 years ago he hit that jumper? That's crazy. That's crazy talk. All right, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. When we come back, we'll hear from Browns defensive lineman Desmond Bryant, who has some very good things to say about head coach Hugh Jackson. That's all coming up here on CBD. By the way, when a medical mistake causes you injury, call 1-800-ELK-OHIO. Elk and Elk, proud sponsor of the Cleveland Browns. Go Browns. We'll be back with more right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm here. By the way, here's your chance to put a BMW through its paces. Join us for an exciting driving experience unlike one you've ever had. Rip around an autocross on a closed circuit, then enjoy a more leisurely drive of the ultimate driving machine on nearby streets. Register today at bmwevents.com/2016CLEVELANDUDE. Again, you get to do some cool stuff in some Beamers. All you have to do is go to bmwevents.com/2016CLEVELANDUDE. All right. Let's hear now from one of the veterans of the Cleveland Browns, a man who played for Hugh Jackson back in Oakland and will be a key piece of this defense, especially getting to the quarterback and dominating up front, Desmond Bryant.
Desmond, can you just talk about, you know, the Browns brought in a number of new rookie pass rushers. What impact does that have on, you know, your mindset, you know, heading into this minicamp and training camp?
Well, that's going to bring a little added level of competition to the team. Obviously, the guys that we have on the team feel like they can rush the passer, and to see that the team chose to pick those guys in the draft, you know, it's just going to help make everything more competitive, push us to elevate our games and make the team better in general.
You know, Staples is, you know, getting after the quarterback. That's not to say that it wasn't emphasized in years past, but especially coming into this year, that's something that they're looking to do. The roster moves made really emphasize that. How do you think you're going to fit in with this defense now going forward as one of the veteran players?
Well, I like to pride myself on rushing the passer. So if that's what Ray wants, that's what he's going to get from me. You know, there's been a number of moves that we've made this offseason to kind of help with that. Bringing in Coach Nunn from the Giants. We brought in a hand fighting specialist with Master Joe Kim. And so all those things are going to go a long way to help us be better at rushing the passer than we were last year.
Ray Horton mentioned that he was asking you to kind of step up your game or step up the intensity a little bit. What did you take from that, or what do you make of that?
Personally, I want to work on being more of a leader. This is the first time in my career I am the elder statesman in the D-line room. And so with that, I get a little bit more responsibility. So on and off the field, I just want to, you know, be more vocal to the guys, you know, let them know what I'm thinking more, which I haven't really done as much in the past.
Can you tell me a little bit more about a hand fighting specialist? What was that?
Joe Kim, he's a master. I don't want to say this wrong. I believe it's Taekwondo. And he's worked in the NFL for a few years now. I know he was with Kansas City for a while. I think most recently he's coming from Chicago Bears. And so he's just got different little, what he calls combos, different positions that we have our hands in. If offensive linemen kind of come at us certain types of ways, he's got counters already built in place for us. And so we've been really drilling that. And again, I think it's really going to help us out in the long run.
After playing so many years of football and now being introduced to sort of a new way of learning or new technique, what does that do for you? Is it kind of like this is a little crazy or?
At first, yeah. I mean, it's because he has so much knowledge in the space that I really am not familiar with. So at first, you know, it's a little intimidating, but, you know, now that we've been doing it for a few months, it's definitely something that it's really going to help us. You know, it's going to make things more instinctual for us as pass rushers with the use of our hands. And personally, that's something that I could definitely work on.
Have you ever been with a team? Kim has been around. He was here like 20 years ago.
Right, he did say that he had been with the Browns.
But have you talked with former teammates who have worked with him at all as to how it transfers to their performance on the field?
Right, Lamar Houston out in at the Bears right now. I asked him about Master Kim, and he said that, you know, it definitely helped with his hands. It definitely helped him.
Did any of your teammates do martial arts before this?
Not that I'm aware of.
How
did you think you played last year, and did you think you needed a greater level of consistency throughout the season?
Well, I feel like I played. I don't feel like I was disappointed with where I was, but there's definitely more room for growth. I think I started off pretty strong, and then I had a pretty early injury, and that kind of limited me for a little while. And then when I came back, didn't do as well. But you know, that's how NFL is. This year, I'm going to be working on trying to have a complete season, doing more. The team actually really has done more in modalities. We have like yoga sessions, different treatments that we do that are really going to help us to maintain our health throughout the season, which I think will go a long way for me, as well as working on endurance, because, you know, 16 or 20 game season, however you want to look at it, it's really taxing on the body. So just being cognizant of that and training with that in mind is going to help.
What's your take? Harvard is in now with this organization. Besides that association, though, just your take on this analytics span, 7 strength coaches, things like yoga and martial arts. You've been around long enough to see an evolution in football. Are we seeing it here?
I think we're seeing the early stages of it. I think that it's really trying to turn football, the entire game of football, into science, rather than just on the field, but everything off the field as well. Trying to dissect it and make it into something, unilateral. And so I think that, you know, we definitely made a lot of moves that I think will help out in the long run. You may or may not see something right away, but I think in the long run, the analytics, bringing in all the right people, bringing in all the strength staff, I think all of those things are the building blocks for it to create something great.
Do you know, yet in your mind, how it's going to affect game planning and game days? Do you have an idea, or are you waiting to see? You know, you said it's helping off the field, but
right. Well, like I was saying about helping guys stay healthy the whole season, I think that'll really help. I think that our schedule on a day-to-day basis will probably be changed to some degree, and I think that'll also be changes that are specifically designed to help players stay healthy. The first thing you notice about Danny is that he's really committed to his weight. The coaches have a set goal for him, and from what I understand, he's already reached his season goal. And so you see that dedication. I think he's developing more into a leader. He's been more vocal in the locker room. He's setting up stuff for guys to do off the field. We did a little paintball and go-karting thing the other day that Danny set up. And so, you know, I think that the stage is set for him to do great things.
He was just getting here at this time last year because he had to graduate. So how much do you think it's helped him to be here this whole offseason program?
Definitely helped him tremendously. Not only was he the whole offseason program, but he actually stayed here the whole offseason. So he's been working with the coaches before we got here. He was in there working with Master Kim I was talking about. So when we came in first day, Danny was up there showing us how to do everything, and I'm just like, wow, okay, this is real. So Danny, I think he's going to be a great pro. He seems really dedicated to his craft, and the sky's the limit for him.
One of the things that we hear from a lot of your teammates is about the accountability that Coach Jackson demands. Can you give me an example of that? I mean, is that something you believe that he does do? And What does that mean?
Absolutely, I believe in that. So we came back from Memorial Day, and our first day of practice wasn't that great. And Coach Jackson let us know after practice, like any coach would. But then the next day, he had an extended team meeting. He had a good 20 to 30 minute speech about the difference between 211 degrees of water versus 212 degrees. He said that we needed that one extra degree to go from hot water to boiling water, to really push ourselves to that level, that next level, and that was really gonna help us win games in the long run. So that's just one example of Coach Jackson, you know, keeping holding us accountable. Others, you know, he's always asking the leaders of this team to hold guys accountable, and he says that when we really get that going, then that we'll be able to win more games in the long run.
Why does that work? Why do guys listen as opposed to feeling like they're just being preached at?
Man, you know, he just has a certain charisma about him that, you know, really reaches players. You can just tell he's so passionate about his job, and he really cares about this team and this organization. And I think that players can really feel that in the way he speaks, and it's really going to help us out in the long run.
Speaking of Hugh, what do you remember from playing with him or under him in 2011 in Oakland?
I remember him coming out with that same passion I was just talking about, and energy. Every day he brings it. He's ready to go. He's ready to work. And I think that he's also a great motivational guy. I remember on game days, he would have these speeches that I'm talking about. And, you know, guys really believed in him, wanted to play well for him because of his passion. It really helps generate passion in other players as well.
Side of the ball, but RG3 was a big add. What kind of enthusiasm, dynamic does he bring to the team from where you sit?
Well, he's obviously a very dynamic player. He's got the legs and the arms, which is a double threat that really helps to build the offense out the way that Hugh is used to doing. You know, off the field, Robert's been he's a kind of quiet leader, but he has a presence about him. Like, you know, he's in the room. You know, he's doing what he's been asked to do. He's going to do a little bit more, a little bit extra. And, you know, as players, we see that and we respect that out of him.
After that year in Oakland, were you pulling for Hugh to get another chance as a head coach somewhere? And then when the Browns started their search at the end of last year, was he the guy you were hoping that they would hire?
Absolutely. When I heard that he was on the list, I really hoped that he would come here. Honestly, he's been probably my favorite coach since being in the league. And you know, we had that our season kind of had a crazy turn, and we lost our owner that year. And so I think he kind of got a raw deal when he left. So I definitely expected to see him become a coach, a head coach again. And again, was ecstatic when he was coming here.
Perspective. What's it been like seeing a guy you played with, Andrew Berry, rise to a pretty prominent role here as a young guy?
Man, I can't say enough great things about Andrew Berry. He's a guy I really looked up to in school. I always tell people he's one of the smartest people I ever known. And so to see his kind of meteoric rise of these last few years, it doesn't surprise me in the least bit. He's a consummate professional, always working, always very intelligent about how he's working, about what he's doing, and to see that does not surprise me in the least bit. I know a few years ago, even, he was already interviewing for GM positions, so to see him here now, it's great to see him. And I know that he's just going to keep working and keep doing great things.
Desmond, why do you think that you were not a vocal leader before, and what has inspired you to want to be more of that?
Being that I was a undrafted free agent, kind of started way down at the bottom of the totem pole, and so in order to survive, really, I had to keep my head down and keep quiet. And you know, so that's kind of how I learned to start in this league. And as I've gotten older, I definitely, any guy who wants to ask me something, I'll impart whatever kind of wisdom that I can. I'll try to give them any kind of coaching, tell them anything. You know, I still didn't really feel it was my place to really speak out as much. But now that, again, it's I feel as if it's a responsibility for me and something I'm definitely committed to doing and have no problems doing.
Is there a guy or multiple guys who, you know, kind of were leaders in D-line rooms that you've been in previously that you kind of think of and want to kind of emulate in that way?
Definitely. I mean, Richard Seymour, he was captain of the D-line. He was captain of the whole team. He's the first guy that comes to mind. He was, again, a great football player, but a consummate pro. He knew exactly where to be and how to do things right way. You think about here, Atapa Rubin, he was a great leader. He was more of a quieter guy. But again, great leader just by through his actions. I mean, I can name a bunch of guys.
That's Browns defensive lineman Desmond Bryan, obviously a huge Hugh Jackson fan and Andrew Berry fan, so he likes the moves that have been made at the top of this organization for the Cleveland Browns, and a guy who many people thought was the best defensive player on the Browns last season, the most consistent, and a guy that will be counted upon to be a havoc wreaker at the front of the Browns defense. All right, when we come back, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Matt and I will start our discussion of the rookies as well, how they have looked so far, and who we think will make a big impact in 2016. That's coming up when we return on CBD.
Get on my elevator, baby, we're going up. Give me that now.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily Dog Pound. Tune in to News Channel 5 every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. to get the latest behind-the-scenes news and information about your Cleveland Browns. Tune in to watch Inside the Cleveland Browns featuring Dustin Fox and Sarah Carnes at 11, followed by Dog Pound Report, a comprehensive weekly X's and O football breakdown with me, as well as Matt Wilhelm, Andy Baskin, and Sir Andrew Gribble. It all starts at 11 o'clock each Sunday morning on News Channel 5. Zagurin Wilhelm here with you, 216-578-0850 on the eve of the day of, I guess, game five of the NBA Finals, the Cavs trailing 3-1. Is your hope completely lost, or are you still holding out like a few percentage points of hope?
You know, I'm in my heart of hearts, I was kind of like, I think it's over, right? Because it's very difficult to go out there and win a game first and foremost. And then I started, you know, tuning into ESPN.com and learning about the, you know, the review of the LeBron, Draymond, you know, tussle.
Sure.
And which brought about the idea of his suspension, and then it became reality. And I went, I mean, it sets up very well. And I think, you know, for a team to lose their energy bug, you know, in Draymond.
Yep.
He's their leader.
Yep.
Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are their scorers. But Draymond Green is the heart and soul of that basketball team. And I know that that fan base, because of all of this, you know, what's happened between Friday and Monday, will be fired up. If the players come out and play well without their heart, I think the Golden State Warriors are obviously going to push through and win without Draymond if they can. But it left the door open for the Cavaliers to go,
oh, yeah,
all right, let's go. And I think after the way we lost Friday, you know, you would think that the Cavs would be on their heels, but I think the Warriors should be on their heels with the loss of Draymond Green. What lineup are they going to start? It's going to be different for him. Where are they going to get, you know, the stretch four, you know, with Love back in the lineup? What lineup are the Warriors going to play? They're going to start Iguodala. What does that mean? Where are they going to get their scoring? So that means if you can stop Clay and you can stop and slow down Curry and limit them, you force Livingston and Bogut and Iguodala and Barbosa and Harrison Barnes to be your scorers.
Yeah.
And our bench, I'll go back to it again, Kyrie and LeBron are going to negate Clay and Steph. It's up to everyone else to play and offset the other guys. And they are missing their next best piece, and we have all our pieces.
We are flush with pieces. You're right about that. I think that it was a good synopsis there, and it will be interesting to see. It's definitely given some hope, the Draymond thing. I thought if they're not beating them three times in a row, but I do think that they have an opportunity now to go into Golden State and win. But the Warriors are going to be fired up. I'm just excited to see how it ultimately all plays out, because I do believe this is going to be a very emotionally charged game.
Oh, yeah.
Which is what makes it fun for me.
And I think also whatever team manages it best, that emotion, can steal a game.
Sure.
Like you said, I would think that the Warriors are going to want to kill it. But if the Cavaliers can steal this game, come home, play the way they did in game three, everything is back on the table.
All right back on the table. Absolutely. Did you happen to watch the OJ thing over the weekend?
I did not.
I did not either. I DVR'd it. I'm very excited to watch it. I heard it was excellent.
Okay.
The first of a five-parter, 30 for 30 on OJ Simpson. All right, coming up in hour number two, I said we'll talk about the rookies, and we'll get into that when we return. We'll also hear from Louis Chofi, the Browns defensive back coach, because that's a position that we're looking at. There's battles at safety, battles at corner. Where does Justin Gilbert really fit in? Does Tremont Williams stay here no matter what? What are they thinking there? Well, a lot of good questions were asked of Louis Chofi. We'll have that interview for you as well in our second hour. So we'll be back with a look at the rookies and Louis Chofi right after this.